This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
Welcome to another week, Bob.
Thanks.
Thank you for being here.
You have
more gardening tips with you. I see your notes. And of course, whatever we talk about, we want to make sure that people know that they can call up anytime with whatever they'd like to ask.
You're darn right.
Okay. 814-368-9372. And we are on Facebook Live as well. Facebook.com/WESB1075. Take it away, Bob. Yeah.
No, even I enjoy the calls because it lets me know what you're thinking about. So I know what direction to go.
But, yeah, what are your interests?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But a big thing right now is the gypsy moth. We're going through one of those stages. And they seem to like a lot of trees. Let me describe them first. The gypsy moth caterpillar we're going to be seeing right now. And it's kind of a dark caterpillar. Can be an inch and a half long. Of course, there's different stages. It may be smaller, too. And it's very dark, and it has blue dots and red dots on it. So that's how you distinguish it. And usually come in big numbers, and you'll see them crawling up and down the trunk of your tree, and they're going up there to eat the leaves. And sometimes they can do a great deal of damage and can take quite a few leaves off your tree. And if your tree is not in great health, if there's something bothering it, you know, it's a possibility that it can kill the tree. Now, if your tree's in good health, like most of ours are, and Mother Nature cooperates by giving it enough water and sunshine and so on, this is not going to bother it at all. I always practice. I don't really bother doing anything at home. I let just the strong survive because that's what I want for the long run anyhow. If you do have a sick tree, maybe it's time to get rid of it anyhow, because for the long run, you know, you're not going to benefit from it. So there are things you can do. There are sprays out there that you can spray on the tree, but make sure you read all the instructions on it. Don't do it on a windy day. Don't do it when you know rain is coming, because the sprays will be washed off. But there are some that are very effective. And if a lot of people probably remember from the past, there are other things we can do, like the BT. Now, that's going to come in a spray also, but that's really a harmless spray to us and to our pets and to the environment. But it will attack the gypsy moth. It's Bacillus thuringiensis.
Yeah, BT. I like that one
BT.
Better. Yeah,
BT. It attacks the caterpillars, and usually, and it must be happening in my yard because I look around and I find what we call caterpillar mummies, dead caterpillars that have just dried up but that are clinging to the tree. Now, no doubt that they have been attacked by the BT, and of course that's keeping the population down. I find very few in my yard, but then I can go a few yards over, and find, I know you're looking right at the button. When's he going to learn that?
You got a big red button right in front of you. That's okay.
When's he going to learn
that? That's your charm. Go ahead.
Thanks. Some areas we'll see where the BT has been working, and there's a couple other diseases too, but I can go a few yards away. And possibly they're getting attacked heavily by the gypsy moth caterpillar. But, you know, it's nothing to get real excited about. Like I said, most trees can survive being defoliated. Trees can really relief. As a matter of fact, a lot of times some studies have been done that when a tree is getting attacked by the gypsy moth caterpillar, it stops making new leaves. And it's going to save that till the gypsy moths stop feeding. Then it'll start making new leaves, and the tree will be fine. I don't know if there's any real scientific study behind it, but a lot of information is showing that. And a lot of trees, like the oak tree, that's one of their favorites, can re-leaf three times in a year. So most of the time, they're fine. But it can be a mess. You may see the caterpillar litter all over the ground, little chunks of leaves all over the ground. But this doesn't happen every year. It's usually a cycle of around 11 years. And so after this year, we should be seeing the population go down for the next 10 years then. So that's it on the gypsy moss. To me, it's nothing to get excited about. As a matter of fact, it can even show us how nature is really working on its defense. So I want to talk a little bit more about a tree and how it's defending against the caterpillars and other insects and diseases. Most things on Earth have a finite resources. In a tree, they have a resource for growth, then a resource for defense, then a resource for reproduction, and a resource for overall health. And if you increase one for some reason, if you fertilize your tree, it's going to increase the growth response. When it does that, it decreases one of the other responses. So it could decrease the defense mechanism in a tree. So I guess my point is, I try not to fertilize my trees, especially during a time like this here when they're under attack, because it can cause more problems. And it can go in other ways too. When a tree is flowering or trying to produce fruit or seed, it has to steal a little bit of energy from growth, so it stops growing and just begins to flower. So
trees are not multitaskers.
No, they're not multitaskers. Okay. Most creatures on Earth are not multitaskers. They rob from Peter to pay Paul.
Right.
So they have five finite resources, and that's important to know. And if you really watch it, you'll learn about those resources when they grow through growth spurts. Probably their defense is down, so be on the lookout for any problems at that point. When they're not in a growth spurt, probably their defense is high or their reproduction is high. So don't look for growth. You know, don't say, geez, it's not growing right now, I better fertilize it. No, it's just the cycle of a plant's growth. So that's enough about the gypsy moth. I also wanted to talk about a few other things. A lot of people like to mulch this time of year, and I like to explain some of the benefits and maybe some of the problems that can occur mulching in the middle of summer. A lot of times mulch is basically wood chips, and so during midsummer, they can start to deteriorate, and as they're deteriorating, they can build up heat. So if you're applying mulch this time of year, it's a good idea that after you've applied an area, that you wet it down with a hose to cool it off, so it won't burn the soil or burn the plant material. So keep that in mind. But also, when you're mulching, let's say you have a bed, it's a good idea to what we call cut a deep edge around the outer edge of the bed where the mulch will meet the grass. That deep edge is going to be 4 inches deep and 4 inches wide, and you're going to fill that trench with the mulch. That will stop most plants from what we call encroaching into that bed, from a lot of your grass plants or weeds, if you have weeds in your grass, from crossing from the lawn into the bed. That little bit of defense kind of is like a wall around a castle.
Nice.
Or a moat around a castle. That stops the enemy from encroaching. Now, some will get through, but it will stop a lot of them. So that's a good idea to cut that mulch edge around there. 4 inches wide, 4 inches deep. Now, don't do it around a tree, because chances are you will be cutting roots around a tree. Mm. And of course, that can affect the health of the tree. So around trees, don't do it. But where your lawn meets your beds, shrub bed, perennial bed, yes, cut that deep edge and apply the mulch there.
About how far should the mulch come out, minimum of, you know, like the main
trunk of a tree?
Right.
Okay. That's going to be a preference for you. A lot of people, I like to do about a 6 foot ring around a tree, because that's where most mowers can travel without backing up and turning, but they'll make that circle easily so that you don't have to fart around with backing up, getting another shot, backing up. So a good 6 foot ring, wider, can be better, depending on the size of the tree. You know, if you got a small tree that's only 10 foot tall, of course you don't want to put a 10 foot ring around it. It just kind of throws everything out of scale.
But as far as hedges go.
Hedges?
Yeah.
Oh, at least a few feet in front of the hedges that gives you that nice barrier. The mulch is not only for looks.
No, I know it has a whole ecosystem, right?
Yeah,
it
does.
It's a whole process.
And it can protect, I'm saying a few feet, because a lot of creatures don't want to cross that 2 feet of barren mulch. It's like crossing a desert to them to get to your shrub. So at least a couple feet of mulch before you get to your shrub, and that will solve a lot of problems there. No? Yes? No?
Nope. Had a phone call, but they hung up, so okay. Sorry about that. If you'd like to ask a question for Bob, it's 368-WESB, 814-368-9372.
And now for us lazy gardeners, that may have a weedy bed, but we're going to mulch. If we just string trim down those weeds, down as far as we can, and then put a nice 3 to 4 inch thick layer of mulch, most of the time that heat in the mulch is going to, and just the cover of it, is going to kill off those weeds. Now, there are some weeds that are very powerful, and no matter what we do, they're just going to keep coming. I think we got a phone call, don't we?
I think you're right. That's very astute of you to read the note card. Those were a good idea, wasn't it? Come on.
Yeah.
Hi, good morning. You're on the gardening show.
Good morning. I have a question for Mr. Harris, if I could.
Yes.
I have my summer squash and my zucchini are getting the big, beautiful blossoms on them.
Uh-huh.
And then they're just dying, and the vine that has the blossom on it is dying. Is there something I can add to the soil or something for that?
No, you probably got a squash vine borer. Now, I can't say that 100%, but probably, because that's what usually happens. If you really look your vine over, you may see a little bit of hole with what we call frass coming out of it, or some substance sticking out of that hole. That probably means you have a borer in there. And what you can do is, you can slit open that vine. It won't kill the plant. Slit it open with a razor blade or a sharp knife, and you may find that grub in there. And, of course, then you can destroy that grub, and that may solve your problem.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, I've got 5 or 6 plants of each one and beautiful blossoms, and they're all just dying.
Yeah. Darn. Now, you know that when a squash first starts to bloom, all the blossoms are going to be male, so they won't produce any fruit.
Okay.
Okay? Now, once they've produced those 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 male blossoms, your next set of blossoms will be female and male combined. And then the male blossom will pollinate the female, and then you'll start to get the fruit. So those first few blossoms, yeah, they'll open and then die off, and nothing. You don't get any fruit from them. So that could be your case, too.
Okay.
Hey, thanks so much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Okay. We are taking your calls, of course, 814-368-9372. And we'll be back with more The Gardening Show right after this on B107.5 FM.
If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. You'll now find a full line of powerful 20-watt DeWalt power tools. Hardware painting projects, you'll find a big selection of quality Valspar paints and Cabot stains, as well as all the accessories you'll need. Check out their newly expanded full line of sanding belts for all purposes. And for your outdoor projects, you'll find wheelbarrows, tarps, and whatever else you need. It's true. If you need it, you'll always find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
Welcome back to The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM. And take it away, Bob. We have more gardening tips and, of course, your questions at 814-368-9372.
Let me continue on a little bit about this, the squash, because this is important. Not all plants, you know, can produce a flower and a fruit or a seed right from that flower. Some plants are, they have separate male and female flowers, and the squash is one of them. And they always produce that male flower first, that because it has a lot of the pollen. And that helps to attract the pollinators to get them coming in. Otherwise, the plant would have wasted a lot of energy by producing a female flower at first with knowing what to do. And it's a possibility. So they produce lots of male flowers, get the pollinators coming in. Then they'll start to produce that female flower. And you can distinguish that by one way, the female flower, where the flower meets the stem, will be a swollen area. That's the ovary. That's where the fruit and the seeds will be produced. The male flower will be the flower comes down directly to the stem. There's no swollen area at all. And so it's just there. Another thing, too, because a lot of us have problems with pollinators anymore. So it's always a good idea to plant a few flowers to help attract those pollinators to those squash plants. Now, sure enough, the squash plants are going to outgrow that area and eventually choke out that petunia or geranium that we put in there. But we call that a sacrificial plant. We have to do that now to get the pollinators in there so that they will go from the male blossom, get that pollen, go over to the female, deposit that pollen, and then we'll have a good squash.
So if a flower has ever done you wrong in the past, you can get revenge by taking its kind and making it a sacrifice to your garden.
That's right.
Good. All right. I like the way you think.
One last way you can do it. And I do it quite often in my yard. You can pluck a male blossom, peel the petals back. You'll see the long protuberance. That's the male part. And you can go around and insert that into the female blossoms. And you'll be the pollinator then. And you'll have successful squash fruiting that way, too.
I'm writing that down. That's the word of the day. Protuberance.
Protuberance, yes.
I like that.
It's also a real good time. I want to remind people that a lot of those spring blooming plants, like our forsythias, rhododendrons, our mountain laurel, azaleas, all those spring bloomers, now is the time to trim them. If we wait too much longer, we'll be trimming off next year's blossoms. But if we do it now, the plant will still have time to produce blossoms for next year. And so now is a great time to trim those spring blooming plants. Now, the summer blooming plants, we usually trim them in the fall or early spring. And the summer bloomers, you know, are hibiscus, geez, the list goes on. I'm going blank here all of a sudden.
Let me tell you, speaking of summer, you know what happens this Sunday?
What's that?
Summer.
Summer? Oh, does it? Okay.
11:32 p.m. is officially beginning of summer.
11:32. Boy, I'll have to watch for that.
Isn't that amazing how they just have it pinpointed
Holy
down?
Holy mackerel. So, spring bloomers, you prune immediately after they're done blooming. Summer bloomers, summer and fall bloomers, you can prune in the fall or early spring because the summer bloomers make their buds in the season that they're going to flower. So if we trim them in the early spring, they start to leaf out and grow and start building their buds immediately. So that's a little hint on pruning flowering plants. Mm-hmm. The non-flowering plants, which most plants do flower, but we consider a lot of the evergreens not flowering because they're really not noticeable. We really can prune them at any time. But a good time is right around now and through July 4th, because they put on a growth spurt. They put on several growth spurts through the year, but this will be one of the bigger growth spurts that they put on. So if we wait till around July 4th and give them a pruning, we're probably going to be good for the rest of the year. So if we time our pruning just right, we only have to do it once a year for any plant. So try to keep that in mind. And I'll mention it again some week here.
Question about the pruning of the evergreens.
Yeah.
Can you just prune what all the new growth, all the brighter green, or are you able to cut it back, or once it gets a little bit too big, is it too late?
No, you can even cut it back. If it's a good, healthy shrub and has been showing some good growth, yeah, don't be afraid to cut it back. Don't only cut back one third of the foliage, no matter if it's leafy foliage or needle foliage. Don't cut back more than that, because then you're stressing the plant out, and it may be at a point where it's not real strong. So you may be stressing it to the point where it's going to start to fail.
Okay, great.
So, yeah, no more than that. Now, once in a while, we can do what we call a rejuvenating pruning, to where we can cut back 50, 60, 70% of the plant. You don't want to do that every year. That's just once in its lifetime that we can do that. So once a shrub may get way out of bounds, probably everybody around here has seen that rhododendron that gets 10, 15 foot tall, and somebody goes in and cuts it down to about 3 foot tall, and it survives and it's well and it does well. You can do that once in its lifetime, and that sometimes it's recommended that we have to do that. So try to prune at the right time, everything will be fine. Don't be afraid of pruning. Make sure your pruners are sharp, though. The sharper they are, the better the cut. When we get ragged cuts, we're just opening ourselves up to fungal diseases and viruses to get in there. So try to get a nice clean cut, and you'll be successful.
When you say you could only do like the major cut down once in a lifetime.
Yeah.
Is there a finite lifetime of a plant, really?
Yes. Yeah, there is. Yeah. And it varies quite a difference. You know, oak tree is well known. It can live 1,000 years. The redwoods out west, they can live for a couple, 2,000 or 3,000 years. The bristlecone pine, nobody really knows quite yet, because there are one or two out there that are 5,000 years old.
Oh, wow.
But then there are those trees that will only grow for maybe 10 or 20 years, and that's their lifespan. That's it. Usually the faster a plant grows, the shorter its lifespan. Mm-hmm. A slow-growing oak tree has a long, long lifespan. And I'd like to talk about the oaks more someday, because it's such an important tree in our forest, but I'm not going to today.
That deserves a whole show by itself.
Yeah. Even perennials, they don't all have a continuous lifespan. The hosta and daylily, they may live forever. You know, as far as we know, the very first hosta ever planted in America is still growing in America.
Okay, so see, that's what I was, I was wondering. So they don't run out of energy.
Not all of them. Some do.
Okay.
There are some perennials that are only good for 1 year.
So when you cut them back for once in a lifetime, that's your lifetime, not theirs.
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Very
and
good.
Some perennials can survive 5 or 10 years, and then they just kind of wear out, because it's taken so much energy for them to flower every year. Perennials will die back to the ground. They disappear. So it takes so much energy to build that new foliage every year, and then the flower and make a seed every year, that eventually they wear out, just like me and you. Eventually, we're going to wear out. We're not really a perennial.
Hey, speak for yourself. Hey, our phone lines are open, by the way. If you'd like to ask Bob a question, It's 814-368-9372. About 5 minutes left in the show.
Okay, one more thing. I really want to stress that it's still time to plant. Maybe a lot of you have heard me say that some of my best gardens, I never got a chance to plant them till July 4th. Mm. And they turned out to be some of my best gardens. But for most gardeners, you know, we can plant that second or third crop of lettuce yet, beans and peas. We can put onion sets in. A lot of those plants we can do two or three times a year. So it's still time to get a garden in of some sort.
My wife wants to grow pumpkins. Is it too late?
No, not really. No, you can still get a pumpkin plant in and still be very successful with it.
Very good.
Most of the squash is like that. It really enjoys summer growth and fall. You usually planting a squash in the early spring, it just kind of sits there and may grow a little bit. But summer and fall is its time to really come on and do all its growth and fruiting. Still plenty of time to plant them. And there's still plants available, too. If you're not going to plant from seed, there are a lot of nice plants available yet. You can still get tomatoes and peppers and squash plants, all those things are still available. So don't be afraid to start a garden even this year, even though it is kind of late.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll get the ones that are already started for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very good. All right. We have 3 minutes left in the show. If you'd like to have a question for Bob, it's 814-368-9372. And by the way, we are on Facebook Live. That's facebook.com/WESB1075. You can leave a comment there, or you can send email garden@WESB.com.
Okay. I want to go back to the mulch again, because there are a couple other things you can do besides cutting that nice deep trench, that 4-inch by 4-inch deep trench, filling it with mulch to protect the bed. We can also, after we apply a fresh layer of mulch, and if you've already been mulched, don't apply another 3 or 4 inches. Mm-hmm. If there's mulch already there, just apply 1 inch. That's plenty. No sense wasting it. As a matter of fact, you could even do some harm by applying too much mulch. Like I said, the heat can really build up and cause some problems there. But it's become very popular for weed defense to use a product called Preen. Preen that you'll sprinkle on, you apply your mulch, sprinkle it on, rake it in, or really hose it in, wet it in heavily, because it can't be exposed to sunlight. If Preen is exposed to sunlight, it becomes inactive. It can't do its job. So it has to go into the dark underneath the mulch. So a good hard watering, or better yet, a raking and watering, gets it down just below that top layer of mulch where it's in the dark, and it'll start to do its job. And what that does, it doesn't kill surviving weeds. What it does is stops new weed seeds from germinating. That's how it works.
Real quick, you're talking about Preen.
Yeah.
What exactly is it? Is it a chemical?
Yeah, it's a chemical.
And is it dangerous to animals? Like if your dog digs it up in the mulch?
No, not to my knowledge. You know, it really isn't. It's a pretty safe product. Most of the products we use, you know, have been tested to no end. So they are pretty safe. Now, there may be that one super sensitive pet.
Yeah.
That may be harmed a little bit, but generally
speaking. But they're not going to get mouthfuls of it.
No. No, because you're not going to really sprinkle it very, very thickly. Mm-hmm. Read the directions on the packages. It shows you how much you're going to sprinkle. You'll see that it doesn't take a lot to do the job.
You just have to mix it in underneath real nice.
Yeah, make sure that it gets into the darkness.
Very good. We're out of time.
Okay.
Can you imagine that? We'll be back next week, though.
You bet.
Never fear. Bob shall return, the Master Gardener, and The Gardening Show back next week. And, of course, always on demand at WESB.com. You have a great day and a great weekend.
Hey, all right.